Well, good afternoon. Welcome once again to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH, your talking place. And in 2013, a five-year-old by the name of Seth Maseko was tragically lost his life in Cardington. And his father is with us today, Tim Maseko, who has written a book titled When the Cardinal Calls. And sitting in also with us today is Terry Tackett, who has had some experiences that might relate to this book. So, gentlemen, it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
And we're going to, let's start with the inspiration for the book.
Well, okay. Well, back in 2013, it was the first day of spring, March 20th. Day started off like any other day. I got my son up, got him dressed, ready for the babysitters, dropped him off, gave him his hug and kiss, told him I loved him, went to work, and later that night, I was staying in the emergency room, and unfortunately, I heard those words that you always think of these words as something you see on TV, you see them, hear them in movies, but I didn't think doctors actually said them, but the doctor looked at me and said, I'm sorry, we did everything we could. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just in that moment, that very moment when you lose a child, the entire world changes. I mean, you change. You are never going to be the same again. And that's kind of what this book was about. It took it from that last day, and it followed several years of my journey since. And it was some of those most difficult times that I kind of chronicled things on. Well, I should let you know that my sister set up a Facebook page for Seth back then. It was called In Memory of Seth James Maseko. And at first, I didn't like it. I was like, "Now this is corny. I don't want the Facebook. This is private type." But at the same time, though, I realized real quickly that it felt good to write. It felt good to release it. So I started using that site to kind of chronicle that journey. And I'm glad I did, because when I went back to write this book, if I hadn't had that, I don't think I would have remembered things the same way or as in depth as I did. It was kind of a you know, jarred my memory, so to speak. And that's kind of where that book came from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this has to be tough to talk about. You were called by your wife. You were at work. Mm-hmm. The wife was at home when this happened. Mm-hmm. And you came home and... tell us what happened then, what you went through.
Yeah, you know, I got the call at work, and I never heard my wife so panicked. I couldn't even understand what she was trying to tell me, and then I finally made out, you know, Tim, come home. And so immediately, I stormed out of the office, and I was only a few minutes away from the house. Luckily, I worked close to home. And by the time I got there, the ambulance was already there, and the paramedics and the fire department and the whole sheriff's office, everybody seemed to be there. And I kind of maneuvered around, jumped through the yard and parked the car, jumped out and ran inside. And the paramedics were working on Seth. And, you know, I had no idea what had happened, what was going on. Right. And so they loaded him up and took him to the emergency room. And I immediately was heading there, of course. And I really wasn't thinking real clear. You know, a moment like that, you're not thinking at all. You're just reacting. So I talked to my wife briefly. And then I got a ride with the sheriff and went up to the emergency room while she stayed there. My mom had come out to the house and all these things. So they were going to make their way up there shortly thereafter. But I just, you know, I was kind of panicked, like, oh, I got to get there. And so in hindsight, I would have obviously taken my wife and my mom with me. But at the time, I just was in a tunnel vision, if you will. As it turned out, what had happened was he had been playing in his room. And the ladder to the top bunk was down. And he had climbed up there, and he got caught up on that top rail of the bunk, and, you know, the rest is what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of hard to talk about that exact. But that's, you know, so we went into a whole thing about bunk bed safety and things in the home. We did an interview with the TV station back then shortly after his death the following summer. Talked about those things. So even now, that's a topic that's hard to talk about. Like initially, I know some people even here in Marion and the Marion Star were saying things like on the website, what are they hiding? You know, why won't people talk about the way he died? Well, how are you going to talk about it? I mean, in that moment, in that early stages, I was appreciative of the fact that the Marion Star didn't plaster it all over the place. I know that happens to some families when a horrible, tragic accident happens. And, you know, you already feel like, oh, why was the ladder down? You already feel this horrid feeling inside, sure. Like, you know, I should have done this differently. And, sure. You know, and I'll be honest, that ladder's down all the time. He was very good about knowing the parameters, and there was no, it wasn't a big deal. Plus, here's my thing about bunk beds. You see those little things on them that says, warning, you know, hazardous, you know, for children 7 years or under. Mm-hmm. But you think of, oh, they might fall off, break an arm, hit a head, you know, these types of injuries. You don't think of a fatality.
Right.
And so I actually worked with the Consumer Product Safety Commission and our local congressman at the time, Pat Tiberi, who's no longer a congressman. Back then he was. Mm-hmm. And great guy. Went down and met with him a few times, talked to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They took a real avid interest in what had occurred. And so it was kind of painful, but we relived it over and over, telling the story repeatedly. And now I did notice, not too long ago, that there are some bunk beds now that actually say warning the fatality could occur, which that was not the case on those back then. So I like to believe, whether it's true or not, I like to believe we had a little part in making that awareness a little more out there for people. But
is that enough, that warning on there? I mean, first of all, are the children going to read them? Aren't the bunk beds made for that age group? I mean...
Yeah, you know, that was the toughest part, is just what you said. So here's my research said this, and this is what really – and I didn't talk about this in the book much, but you hit on a topic that's really true to my heart here. Mm-hmm. So bunk beds were – really, this has been known for years. I mean, over 100 and some children have died in the last decade. But here's what the Consumer Product Safety Commission will say. They didn't say it to me, but they said to the reporter, I'm sorry about his death, but it was insignificant. Okay, so my child's death was insignificant because the numbers weren't high enough for them to validate educating people about the dangers. And then I found out that the bunk bed manufacturers pushed back when regulations were talked about because the aesthetic look, the look of the beds mm-hmm. were cool having the pose, and the look of the beds were cool designing it this way.
Right.
They disregarded the fact that these were a danger. And so at the time, you know, a lawyer said, hey, you know, you probably have a lawsuit here. And it was one of those things where, you know, for a second you go, you know, maybe I do have a lawsuit. But at the same time, what does that lawsuit mean? I'm not going to make my wife relive that
right.
for any amount right. of money. You could have said $1 billion. It didn't matter. When you're in that moment, that's not a place you can be. And it's not a place I could go. And so it was just frustrating to me. So I do go out and I tell people, hey, you know, be careful about these bunk beds. The newer designs are not as bad. They've really kind of regulated this in a little closer now, and people are starting to follow those guidelines. But you're talking, this bed was probably a 1990 something. I don't remember what the year of it now, but you know, it's an older bed, and those hand-me-down beds are the ones I'd worry about, the ones that are passing generation to generation.
Right.
You need to be aware of those. There's still a lot of dangers, not only the extensions, but people said the kids would get caught between the wall and the edge of the bunk bed.
Oh, my, yeah.
And so a lot of bad things can happen there. So I go out with our safety portion of our nonprofit, and we talk about just be safe, and not just bunk beds, but all that stuff in the house.
Yeah. A lot of things that people just don't think about. I mean, set up the beds. Oh, kids, there you go. Play on them, sleep on them, you know.
Yeah.
And that's normal. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what happened, and not the incident, but afterwards, the community support and things that you had. You had a trip to Disneyland. A lot of things went on after this event.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the bright spots in the book, I think, is the, you know, right now, you know, you had the shootings recently. We're in the big right. news right now, and the human spirit can be so ugly at times, can't it?
Yes.
But in moments like what we went through, the human spirit can be amazing and beautiful as well. Mm-hmm. And what you're referring to, we wrote about in the book, but our family had pulled some money together, and my aunt had actually lost my cousin, Tony Matthews, many, many years ago, back when I was about 18, 19 years old myself. And so she had gone through the child loss portion of it, so I had somebody in the family that could relate.
Right.
In ways others couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of was a leader in this, but she put together this and she said, here's some money from the family members. What benefited me was getting away and just getting away from the whole thing after Certainly. The death. And so we went down and spent time with our Uncle Harold in Florida and then his family. Got to go to Disney World and just kind of, you know, go to the beach and just decompress a little bit. And, you know, and it helped in ways. It helped. But then on the way home, we get back. Well, we got home. And we realized the community had come together and had remodeled our home. They put in hardwood floors. They put on a brand new deck on the front of the house. Mm-hmm. They put a brand new sidewalk leading over to the driveway and all this landscaping and just all this really awesome stuff that you know, stuff you always would like to do to your home that you never have the time or the budget. And, you know, it was a lot of the stuff was done for us, and it was just an amazing feeling to go back in there. And that really came about, too, because Troy Ruhrman and I were talking, a good friend of mine who stepped in, you know, Troy, yeah, great guy. And he had helped out with the family at the time. And I told him, I said, you know, it's going to be hard for my wife to come back and live in this home again because what we went through in the home.
Most certainly.
And you know, the stain on the carpet where they worked on him and just all these different things, even for myself, you know, to see that, the blue carpet, I never leave my mind. And so we talked about what can we do while you're gone to remodel this. So, you know, him and I talked this out. And so I had a good idea of what he was going to try to accomplish. But I gave him my, okay, these are things I really think we need, the hardwood floors and some paint on the walls and mm-hmm. kind of get it fresh. Here's my dream list, right? And he much went for the dream list, and he got pretty much all that stuff done that I probably would have never gotten done for the next 15 years. But so the human spirit was amazing. Everybody in the community came together and did that for us. And that's one of those things that will just forever stay in my mind about, as horrible as that moment was, there was a lot of beauty there too.
Mm-hmm. There were probably thoughts of never going back to that home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a guess, but I'm sure that there were.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, even now with the remodel and everything else, it's not a home that it used to be anymore. You know, that's reality. When you have a child lost like that, there's just things are different. And you know, my daughter now has grown up, and she's out on her own in her apartment and going to college and all those things. And so there's nobody else left. And Seth was the one that's going to take us into our retirement age. By the time he got through, we'd been closer to our 60s and then been like, okay, now we're done. And so now we have this gap here. And so sometimes that house is very quiet and very lonely, even though it's my wife and I. You mm-hmm. still have those moments. Even though you're sitting in the room together, you just, you know, you go through those things. And it's a hard journey. It's really hard. I know there's a lot of people out there who have gone through it. It's tough.
Yeah. I can only imagine. I'm not been through that myself, but I can only imagine how that feels to go through all that. I'm going to read your little foreword, I believe it is, in the front of the book here.
Sure.
And why it is so hard to believe that our loved ones... Why is it so hard to believe that our loved ones can reach out to us after they die? If it's not them, then at very least it's God allowing us to know that they are okay. Either way, I now find comfort whenever I hear the cardinal call. Tell us about the first time that you met the cardinal in your yard.
Yeah, that's been the story that people like to hear, because that was an amazing interaction for me, and it really changed things. So what occurred was we were staying at my mom's house after Seth had died, and we were struggling. And I would sit up every night. I wouldn't sleep. I would just sit up in the chair and just stare out at nothing and argue with God, you know. And I said some things that people probably shouldn't say to God, right? And, you know, I was
angry. That's understandable.
Yeah, I was angry, and I was in a very dark place. And, you know, I was like, why me? Why us? You know, what did I do? You know, what kind of God are you? You know, all those typical things you can imagine. And there were no answers were coming. And after the third night, my body gave out and it just kind of dozed off. And a couple hours later, I woke up. And I had this vision of Seth and the snuggle time that we would spend together every night. And so later that morning, my wife got up and I kind of told her about it. And I said, this is kind of cool. I went out to the house to get some change of clothes and shower and pet the dogs. And she wasn't ready to go with me, so I went out by myself. To make a long story short, I saw this beautiful red cardinal in the back pine tree. Well, actually, in the back trees behind the pine tree. And he was staring at me through the window. And my wife's sister was there staying at the house for us at that time, and she said, have you got your sign yet? And I said, no. She said, well, I think you're about to. And I went outside to take a picture of that bird. One thing led to another, and I got closer to him, and I thought he'd fly away, so I was really worried about that, but he didn't. He jumped a couple branches from tree to tree, and every so many feet he'd stop and look back at me and start chirping up a storm. And I just kind of followed him slowly down the tree line. All of a sudden, he got to a certain spot, and he just stopped, and he just started chirping like crazy, just yelling at me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what in the world is going on with this bird? It's the weirdest experience I ever had. And then something in my head just said, look down. And I have no idea where that voice came from or where that thought came from, but I looked down, and directly between the toes of my feet was a baseball. Mm-hmm. And the significance of that was the fact that that was the baseball that Seth had lost that weekend. And he would have been stressed about it because, as he told his sister Allie, he said, "Dad's going to be mad. I lost this baseball. We have a whole bucket of balls. I wouldn't have been mad, but, you know, right. baseball's thing we did." And he knew we had to find him, picking up so you don't mow over him, all those things. And out of all things to stop on, the ball that we could not find was laying right there in plain view. And I picked that ball up and I looked at the Cardinal and I said, "Is this my sign?" And the Cardinal chirped again and he flew away. And from that moment on, there was a connection with me and those Cardinals. They appear everywhere, everywhere when I'm having, especially when I'm having a bad day. But, you know, at that moment, it really did something special for me. It gave me a sense of hope. It gave me a peace I hadn't had yet. Mm-hmm. And not that it made everything better, but it gave me something to hold on to and say, you know what, maybe I don't know what I thought I knew. Maybe there's more to this, and maybe we do get signs, because at that point I didn't believe in that type of thing ever. Mm-hmm. And that kind of changed the whole thing.
I think that would, for anybody that you've made me a believer with this book, trust me. You talk about different ways that you believe that our loved ones can reassure us or communicate with us mm-hmm. after they passed. Why don't we talk about some of those?
Sure.
There's a whole list in here, but let's see. Page. If you have the book, it's page 147 where that starts. First one is through dreams.
Yeah, you know. So first of all, when I told the stories in the book, you know, I just told them the way I remembered them, and I almost like cut out some things. I even told Terry over here. I said there were some things I put in the book that I almost didn't want to put in because I was afraid that people would say, "Well, Tim, don't you, you know, you're a Christian. You know, how can you believe this when the Bible says this, the Bible says that?" And then I realized I just need to tell my story, period. It is what it is. Right. You take from it what you will, but those are things that happen. And so when I talk about this section, I talked about, like, certain things that they say happen to people, but I put them in there because something happened to me in that way. So when we talk about dreams, yeah, I definitely had a dream where Seth came to me, and I think a lot of people have those. And pretty significant when it happens. Terry, you had anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Terry has had a couple of folks that he's very dear and close to pass.
Yeah.
And you feel like you've had some of those incidents.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was telling Tim, every possible emotion that you could have went through, I think I've experienced that. Mm-hmm. And he's exactly right when he says, as far as the grief part and everything, I mean, you kind of deal with it, but you really never get over it.
It's never gone.
Yeah,
is it?
Right. It's still,
you just,
I mean,
I think you get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll carry it with me for the rest of my life. I mean, I've reran the scenario in my head probably a million times. If I'd have done things, why didn't I do this? Why did I do that? You know, I mean, could I have prevented, you know, you think of all kinds of stuff, you know, I mean, and, you know, it just weighs on you. But I mean, there's every single night I in some way, shape or form, I think of something that, you know, that reminds me of.
Have you had any incidents that you think could possibly be one of your loved ones?
Oh, absolutely.
Communicating,
yeah,
with you in
absolutely.
Some way?
There was a song on the radio that me and Michelle, it was a really good song that we really enjoyed. It was by Adele.
Okay.
And it was a song, Water Under. Well, the other day I'm getting ready for work and I'm listening to this adult say, and all of a sudden that song comes on.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, I mean, oh my God, is this, you know, is this her, you mm-hmm. know, she's talking to me, you know. And then my relative, and I got hanging on my patio, my apartment here, my relative, when my mother passed, had made me a wind chime. Mm-hmm. You know, in memory of my mom. Well, the other day I'm leaving for work and that thing is just going crazy, you know. So I had to kind of stop and take a minute and, you know, and but those are the two main things, like I say. But I just, there's every day, I mean, in some way, shape or form, I think about them all the time.
Oh,
and,
certainly.
You know, I mean,
certainly.
Either an action or an old saying or, you know, or something. And, you know, I think of them all the time, like I say. But it's just, a lot of people don't understand. I mean, a lot of people want to try to tell you how to deal with grief, and that's the part that gets me angry, is that they don't know You know, exactly. Who are they? Who are they to tell you? You know how you're supposed to deal with, exactly. with something. You know, and
each person's different.
How yeah, they deal yeah. With I mean, things. You know, I've had people tell me, "Oh, just get over it." You know, you never get over it.
You feel like slapping yeah, them. Yeah, yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's like, you know, then you have these group of people comes up. Well, there's nothing more you can do. You know, and. What? I mean, it just, some inappropriate, you know, inappropriate things. I think so anyway, yes. You know, and I mean, that's the thing that bothers me probably more than anything, like I say, is that they try to, you know, tell you how you should feel, you know, and
they don't the, mean, they yeah, don't, they're trying to help when they do that, but, right. but it's not helping.
Right. It's coming across almost like, you know, I don't know. It's just, yeah. And that's the thing that bothers me a lot is that, you know, and like I say now, you know, I always tell people, you know, when I see them out, you know, I mean, I still like the fact that if they come up and, you know, they acknowledge me, you know,
sure.
I mean, that's.
And I've gotten sensitive to that because of some folks that I've lost.
Yeah.
And then people coming up and
right,
the way they've
right,
reacted
right,
or
right,
talked
yeah,
to me,
yeah, you know.
I'm more careful with how I talk about that. I said, you know what? I don't know what you've been through, but I'm there with you, yeah. You know.
Well, mine, it was just, man, it was 9 months apart.
Right.
It was my mom first, and my, 9 months later, I mean, yeah. I was like, what in the
what
world?
A toll it took
what
on
did
you.
I do, you know, to, yeah. to this, you yeah. know. But like I say, that's one of the, what did you say, the 12 different signs or whatever the thing was of emotions or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, I've gone to a few grief groups, and I even thought about getting into some grief leadership type things because what you two are talking about is something that comes up at every grief group, that and mostly they're women there. I mean, when you go there, as a guy, I tend to go not because I need it as much as I feel like I can be supportive of other people.
Sure.
Try to give back a little bit because I've been there. But the common complaint is the things that people say to you mm-hmm. after the loss.
Certainly.
And here's what I come to conclude, and I kind of touched upon the book a little bit, but at the end of the day, people mean well, but when they say certain things they think are helping, they're actually hurting, or they think it's coming across a certain way, but the person grieving, their mindset is different.
Right.
It's not where you're at.
Exactly.
And so they're going to take it, like when you say, well, God needed an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like a reasonable thing to say until you think about what that person's going through. They're saying, yeah, but I needed that person here.
Or they're in a better place now. I mean,
yeah.
These are maybe true statements, and if you are a Christian and believe these things, then you might hold that dear, but it doesn't help the person in that
right.
moment.
You're still grieving here on Earth, even though, you know what I mean, and that's the thing that I don't know if they can get past that realization or whatever, you know, is that you're still hurting inside, mm-hmm. you know, and
well, yeah. Our society has a really poor grasp on grief in general. Like we teach our kids math and science, and we teach them even they learn banking as they get older. They learn about different things that we need in life,
right?
But they don't learn how to grieve or how to handle grief. When someone around them dies or a friend's parent dies or these things happen,
absolutely.
We haven't as a society understood how to deal. Other societies have, other foreign cultures, but in America, in the Western civilization, you don't really have a good grasp on that, so you don't know how to react. And so there's some really things that really bothered me that were said, but I took them as an, okay, this person is ignorant to the loss
mm-hmm.
and good for them. You know, good for them. They don't have to experience, and they're fortunate. They're lucky, and I know at the end of the day they mean well.
Yeah,
and quite often, the best thing's just a big old hug.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah,
just a
yeah.
hug, and I love you,
yeah.
or I'm with you. You know.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
That's
yeah.
Sort of, yeah, I'm yeah. here for you. That's yeah. that's good.
That's right.
In fact, I even I talked about how the some of the best things that happened for us was like the remodel of the house. I know that's a little extreme because not everybody can get that done, but
right.
I mean, you know, just those showing, like we had people like make food for us.
Mm-hmm.
Those little things that people do, that's what you remember. You know, like you said, the hugs, and we had the Carrington did a softball game that they did in memory of Seth.
Right.
And just those little things of remembrance, and it makes you feel good to say, hey, people care. They don't have to say anything. Just the actions show that, and I think sometimes that's the better way to go.
But I think people are nervous,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really know what to say. You know what I mean? It's not yeah. it's not they're being ignorant or that they're being rude. They just don't know what to say. So
yeah, I agree. Well, when I use the word ignorant, I guess I should clarify that. Yeah. You know, when I say ignorant, I mean that's in the literal term. If you look it up, you know what it means, which is you just don't know.
You don't understand.
Yes. And yeah, because that's kind of a harsh word when you think of it that way. No, when you said, I'm like, you know what, that does sound. And I didn't mean it that way at all. But that's the literal use of the word. You know, it's not meaning.
Putting you down for using that.
But I'm glad you brought it up. Because somebody out there might be like, oh, that was pretty harsh, and that's not what I meant at all. It's just that's what the word means. When you don't know, you don't understand.
Right,
That's all it is.
Yes, yes. Another way that you've talked about folks being talked to by those that have gone on is numbers, and you have an interesting story in there about that.
Yeah, I won't get too far into that, but yeah, it was interesting. I went to a church in Ashley, and I spoke, and I got up and I talked about some of the things that happened, and I talked about how this number kept appearing for us. Like, everywhere we'd go, we'd see the number 10. Mm-hmm. We'd go to the movies, we'd be sitting in row G, seat 10 and 11, you know? We'd go to the hotel room on a trip, and it'd be 8, 10. It's just everywhere. It was crazy. And so I did not talk about that at the church when I was speaking that day. And this gentleman came up to me afterwards, and he said, you know, I loved your story. I love what you were saying. And I just got a question. I said, yeah, go ahead. He said, do numbers mean anything to you? And I thought that was amazing how I didn't mention this, and the book wasn't out at that point. And he brought that up, and I thought, wow, you know, so numerology does play a factor apparently. But, you know, I did some research, and the whole world's made of numbers when you get down to it, the mathematical equations and everything. So it's not shocking to me that maybe the numbers do appear and they do mean something.
And one thing didn't mention, when you mentioned 10, that was going to be his number when he played T-ball?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the number 10 came from.
Yeah, he picked that number out as his number, and he had never got to play on organized ball yet. That was going to be his first year, and he was very excited, and so that's where that number came from.
Yeah. Says here, if we looked at the clock, it always seemed to be 10 minutes after the hour. It was constant and caught our attention as we began to notice the pattern. So, and then the motel, you went with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Heather?
Yeah, the Deskin family. Yes. So Heather and her daughters had lost their husband the year prior, and they'd gone through a really traumatic time. And so we went down to stay in Florida together on a different trip from the first one. This was a few years later. And so Brian had passed on 11/7. And we get down to this hotel room, and out of all the rooms in this gigantic hotel, and we're staying together, two families' losses, the number of the room is 11/07. Mm-hmm. You got their date of his death, and then we got our number 10 stuck right in the middle of that thing. So two families, two losses, and two numbers that combined. What are the chances of that happening? Unbelievable.
Pretty phenomenal, isn't it? Have you had any experience with numbers like that, Terry, that you can think of?
Not really. Like I say, mine's just really more of things, you know, rather than that. Yeah.
Well, here's what's interesting, too. I should say this because I think all of us get these types of signs. And sometimes we just don't notice them.
I agree.
You know, I don't think I'm special by any means. Right. It's just I was noticing these things around me.
You're more sensitive to those things.
Very much. Like now I'm not as sensitive, and I might still be getting some of those I don't even notice. But I think in those traumatic moments, that's when you'll notice them. And even then, maybe like Terry, maybe he just did notice some things.
Animals. Talk about animals and maybe somehow coming back to talk to you through animals. In your case, it would be the cardinals, I believe.
Yeah. For me, you know, it was the cardinal. That was the only animal that I had. But, you know, they also talk about insects, you know, butterflies and dragonflies and all these things. And my wife had an interaction with the dragonfly a few times where it kept coming, wanting to land on her and stuff. So she kind of had her moment with that. And they say that's a very common occurrence after the death of a loved one.
Small objects.
Yeah, what did I put in there? I don't even remember that portion, to be honest
with
you.
Let's see, like coins and feathers are reported.
Okay, yeah. So when I reported that one, I was actually looking at another family who had lost their father, and the white feathers kept appearing in their house, and they mentioned it to me. And they said, you know, it's crazy. White feathers are everywhere. We pull the pillow off the couch, a white feather all of a sudden is there. We go to get our coat out of the closet, a white feather is in the pocket. You know, they're like, how do these things happen? And so I kind of included that when I did some research. They talked about the small objects being one of those things that appear, coins and different things. Mm-hmm. Terry's shaking his head. Yeah.
Well, Michelle's family, it's funny. Her daughter had called me one day, and that's what she said. Said she was doing dishes or something, and miraculously on the floor just behind her, just single white, you know.
See, there you go.
So.
Wow, so she thought backed it up.
She thought that was her sign, of course, you know, from her mother, you know, absolutely, or whatever. And
so. Yeah, they say that happens. Now, I didn't have that, but it's amazing the things they say.
The next one you have listed here is movement, like pictures and things falling off the wall and so on.
Yeah, you know, we have plenty of that. We had a lot of unexplained movement. Pictures would be turned, and we had things fall off the wall. Like when and when my daughter got freaked out in the middle of the night. She woke up, we heard a big bang, and I go in and the picture of them had fallen off the wall or whatever. Just little things, you go, you know, all this time this has been hanging here, why is it falling off now? So sometimes you wonder.
Electricity. You got a story with electricity.
Oh, the ceiling fan story. Boy, picking up the juicy parts, aren't we? Yeah, I still can't explain. If there's an electrician listening and you can explain this, please give us a call because I don't get this one. I was laying in the lounger kind of dozing off, and my wife said, "Tim, the fan's moving." And I kind of groggily looked up, and I'm like, "Okay, the fan's moving. So what? You know, the ceiling fan's moving around." And she said, "But the electric's not on. The switch is off." And I said, "Well, you know, electric current can get through there. What's the big deal?" And about then it stopped. It just kind of came to a halt. And I said, "Well, there you go. And there's no breeze or anything. We're in the house." And all of a sudden it started back up again, but it's turning the opposite way. I'm like, what in the world? And so they say the electrical currents, that spirit can actually somehow manipulate that. And don't know if it's true or not, but in my case, I can't explain the ceiling. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Synchronicities.
Yeah, synchronicity. So two unexplainable events, like two separate events, kind of come together somehow, and that's what synchronicity is, and it means something together. And I think in the book I kind of talk about how I mentioned Brian Deskins earlier. I did a wedding with a friend, and we were talking about – I was talking to Heather a few days before that, and I was thinking about Brian. I go to this wedding to do the announcing, the DJ, and helping out, and the guy's name was it Brian Deskins?
Deskins, yes.
Deskins. I mean, Brian Deskins. Brian was spelled differently than Brian Deskins, but it was like one letter in the first name, one letter in the last name. That's the only difference. And you just, those moments, you go, wow. Wow, that's just crazy.
You know what? I think I've had moments like that, too, now that I think about it. I can't tell you specifically, but I think I've noticed some things like that in my life.
Yeah, synchronicity is common, more common than people realize. And again, these are things we could really dive into if we had, like, you know, 6 hours or something.
Sure.
There's so much to this stuff.
This is one that I think most people can relate to, music.
Yeah, well, Terry just told his story there, didn't he, about the Adele song. And I think that's very common. I think that's one of the most common things. And it's not that you just hear the song, but it's that the song comes on at a certain time when you just didn't, like, how did that song get played out of all songs right now?
Yeah, that's probably the thing that gets me the most, is that, like, when you, I don't know, maybe the term when you don't expect it, maybe, you know, then all of a sudden it plays.
Yeah.
And you were just maybe thinking about, that's the thing that gets me more than anything, is just the times that it's played, mm-hmm. you know, is that, wow.
Just at the right time, isn't
yeah,
it? Just,
yeah.
Yeah. Just comes together. Of course, I think that this is one a lot of people can relate to too, is feeling the presence of that person. Terry, you were talking before we come on the air even about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you've felt that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you have when you walk into what was Seth's room. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, I walked in there, especially early on, you know, you get that chill, and you just felt like, wow, there's something going on. You know, you had those moments, and I think even years later, you still have those moments where you just can sense that they're there.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, thoughts.
Yeah, we
sometimes
all do those.
Yeah. This is a word that I'm not familiar with, clairaudience.
Clairaudience. See, and when I was doing my research for the book, see, I did a lot of research to go through this section because I was not familiar with – I didn't believe in signs. I didn't believe that these things worked this way until I went through what I went through. Clairaudience is talking about the hearing the voice or hearing something that reminds you of that moment. And so for me, I wasn't a big fan of that concept, but my daughter, my wife would say – you know, Seth's room, we can hear his voice. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, yeah, you're crazy. Like, no, I was in the bathroom and I heard out of Seth's room, I heard, hey, Mom. And I thought, yeah, sure you did. You know, I'm doing my doubting Thomas stuff. And so one day they were both gone, and I heard it clear as day. I heard, you know, hey, Mom. And it was Seth's voice, definitely Seth's voice. And I walked back, and I heard it one more time, and then after that I didn't hear it. Never heard it again. Don't know if it was a mental thing where because I was told that, maybe subconsciously my mind was messing with, I don't know. But they said clairaudience is a real thing. And so when I was doing my research and I saw that, I went, are you kidding me? You know, because I did have that moment, and I'm not trying to explain it.
I did a couple of weeks ago.
Did you?
Yeah, I came home from work, and I was sitting in my recliner just watching TV, and next thing you know, I dozed off. Well, I could feel my mom tap me. She's like, go to bed. And I was like, Mom, I'm going to bed. And then I realized, oh.
See, this would be nice.
I mean, I came up and looked around. I'm like, oh gosh, what did I just?
I wish we had the setup where we could get everybody to give us their stories. Because you know, right now, if people hear this, they've got their stories out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I did have a dream. I'm going to say recently. It was probably earlier this year that my mom and my dad were both there, and we were just, you know, talking and just like normal. They both have been gone for, well, Dad since 2007, Mom since 2011, and I woke up quite happy because I thought I was really, it's one of those dreams where you wake up and am I really? No, that's not real, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I these things do happen. I do very much believe.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add about the book itself?
Well, no, I think you hit some of the really cool stuff there in that last section. I mean, the whole book goes through all these different scenarios and the things I went through and how I kind of progressed along. And again, everything in there that I wrote was my experience. And I try to tell people, even the book, you know, take this for what it's worth because this is what I went through. It may not be what you went through. It may not be somebody else went through. But, you know, it's really a really interesting journey, let me tell you. And it hasn't stopped.
Yeah. Don't know if it ever will stop, you know. I mean, like I say, yeah.
No, it never will stop. I think you get used to the situation. Yeah. But with me, lots of times it's a song I hear or it's a smell. Mm-hmm. Sometimes smells bring back, oh, that's Mom baking something, you know, in the kitchen, that sort of thing.
That's
or
great.
Dad out... That's out in the shed where he had the welder,
Excellent.
You know.
Yeah.
Those kind of just common smells.
Right.
It's funny you said that because in my research, they talked about smells, and it was another one that I could have included in the book. I didn't because for me, I didn't experience any of those. So in the book, I tried to include the things that kind of were applicable to what I went through, mm-hmm. but there are several more, and that's one of the prime ones you just hit on was the smells. So it's interesting you brought that one up.
I do think that smells do trigger trigger memories, and maybe that's another way that folks are reaching back to talk to us. I don't know.
Well, here's what I said. So for the people that say, you know, I read the Bible and the Bible says this, says that, you know, mm-hmm. first of all, the Bible does say that we can communicate. It says not to if you read it that way, but it does say it's a possibility. So I'm not saying that we're talking to our loved ones directly. That's not, you know, my point was just that something's going on that I can't explain. There's too many things, you can't just call them coincidences. I mean, one or two, fine, but when you get this whole series over a course of a period of time, there's something larger at work. And who's to say it's not God or whatever you want to believe in mm-hmm. that's allowing this to happen so that you have a sense of comfort, you have a sense of joy again. You know, you've got to go on living somehow. You're not here to just be in mourning for the rest of your life.
Right.
And so I found that typically when you lose someone, as difficult as it is, there's either a downward spiral or there's an opening for something better to come.
Oh.
And that's how I've chosen to look at it. Now, mm-hmm. granted, I would give everything in the world up to have my son back. I mean, sure. Not saying that. But at the same time, we've formed this charity, this nonprofit. We go out and we work with families. We've written the book. We have the children's book, Seth Snuggle Time, that we released that talks about having positive relationships between your child and the parent. There's a lot of positive things that are coming out. The community came together. I mean, just one thing after another. And so I think you either got to take the positive and build on it and let his memory live on in a positive way, or, you know, what's it all for?
Or what, like in my say, or you keep dwelling on it like I was doing for a long time. I mean, there was times right. I would just go home and just do nothing but think. Mm-hmm. You know, like I say, I've ran the scenario back in my head probably 500 times. So now, like Tim said, I mean, you never get over it, but you just kind of you know, move forward, and that's what I've kind of done too. Is that my goal is now is I want to give back a lot to people, you know, in different ways and things like that. So that's that, you know, because I know that's what my mom and her would have both wanted me to do. So that's why certainly. I'm trying to.
Well, and Tim,
I've adopted a couple of classrooms. I think, you know, I'm going to get them some supplies for the teachers for the classroom.
Oh, that's awesome! So, that's good. Very yeah, good.
So.
And what you've done and what Tim's done with the books he's written, he's taken his experience mm-hmm. and used it to help others that are going through similar experiences. Absolutely. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something a little bit different. We have about 4 minutes right now. And bike lending. You're starting a new program starting with the Cardington Library?
Yeah. Part of my real job is mobility manager. I cover Crawford, Marion, and Morrow counties, and also the bike lending program you mentioned is part of the nonprofit as well. I've kind of doubled them up, actually. Work at the Carrington Library. So what we're going to do is when the parents come in and they say, hey, we want to check out a bike, you got your library card, you come in, you check out the bike for the day, and you take it and you sign the agreements and you can have it for the afternoon. The idea is that some families don't have the resources to have a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an opportunity for them to go out and get the adult bike, the child's bike, whatever, the helmets and all that stuff, and go for a bike ride that afternoon and then return them back to the library. So a lot of libraries are doing this around the nation, but I think most of them have resources where they're buying really nice bicycles and
sure.
the high-dollar $500 mm-hmm. trikes and all these fancy things. Well, in Morrow County, there's not a lot of money to go around over there. So we got people to donate bikes, just old used ones, and we had some people fix them up. And we are launching that this weekend for the first time and going to see how it goes. And then towards the winter, we'll put the bikes away and bring them out next spring, run that, and then we're going to look at the numbers. And if that goes well, we want to do the model all around Morrow County, let all the libraries do it. I think it's going to be really successful. This Saturday, we have a bouncy house from 10:30 to 1:30 at the Carrington Library. We've got free lunch, hot dog, chips, and then soda or water. You can check out the bikes and just kind of get a feel for what we're doing. So it's kind of a cool thing.
So that'll be the 10th of August at the Carrington Library. There's times again?
10:30 to 1:30.
Okay. So make sure you stop in and check out that program. And if people want to donate nice used bikes or even go out and buy one and donate it, how do they go about doing that?
You know, I would say the easiest way to do that is to send me a message through our website, whenthecardinalcalls.com, name of the book. So whenthecardinalcalls.com, you can go through there, send me a message, or go to my email, and I can answer to you and kind of direct you from there. Because I would not just contact the Carrington Library. They're pretty busy, and they may not be able to. They don't want to be inundated with a whole bunch of bicycles.
Sure,
but feel free to reach out to me. And also, I should probably plug the book one time. So,
yes, please do. Where can we get that book?
Yeah, you can actually get that book on Amazon. Amazon.com, of course. Just punch in When the Cardinal Calls, and the book will pop right up. It's done very well as a whole. It was number one on the bestseller list for a little while. And I was real proud of that. Not that really matters in the grand scheme of things. You're just looking at, you know, I want the book to make a difference.
Sure.
So, but Amazon is where you can get it, Amazon.com, When the Cardinal Calls.
Okay, and your other book, the game book?
Yeah, Seth Snuggle Time Game. You can only get that through the nonprofit. And so, again, if you're interested, feel free to give me an email message there at whenthecardinalcalls.com, and I can give you more information on that. But we have soft cover books for as low as $5 plus shipping if you want it mailed. And then we have the hardcover versions that are $15 plus shipping. And that book is 100% minus the cost of creating the book, of course, is to the 501c3 nonprofit. So the children's – and it's a children's picture book is what it is. It's perfect for ages, you know, 6 and under-ish, you know, give or take a year.
Mm-hmm.
We found that the younger kids love it because you go find the cardinals. The cardinals are located throughout the book.
Oh,
so
right. Okay.
It's pretty cool, and it's a good family book. So I get a lot of families that say they read it every night before bed.
Okay. So When the Cardinals Calls by Tim Maseko is available on Amazon. And you've been listening to The Mike Wilson Show once again on WWGH, your talking place. And be listening again next Monday at 5:15 to The Mike Wilson Show.